ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Friday, June 16th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, another day, a little bit of pressure on gold. It's struggled, and we're looking at gold today. Basically unchanged, $1,255.40 today, almost up a buck. Silver, $1,677, down a few pennies, 0.06. Platinum was up $5 at $932, up 5. Palladium was $874, up a buck. USDX today, some pressure, but still over 97, 97.12, down 37. Crude oil, oh, it was an up day for crude oil, 0.25, 44.71. And the paper markets today, you know, the Dow was up 23 points, 21,383, of the NASDAQ down 13 points at 61.51, and the S&P basically unchanged at 24.33. 10-year yield, 2.16%, euro 1.12, that was up 0.47. European markets were basically unchanged overnight. There's a couple of interesting reports out today. There was an announcement. Well, let's do this other one first. There goes Al.
There goes what, Melody?
Anyway,
oh,
there.
I get it.
Most of the U.S. stocks retreated, as I mentioned. The dollar weakened. Treasury yields weakened. There's poor housing data. The most important market news of the day, food retailers led losses in the S&P after Amazon agreed to buy Whole Foods Market. Equities paired declines as energy producers advanced. The yen weakened. Oil rose a little bit, as I mentioned. But the big news was Amazon is buying Whole Foods. And I did have a report on that, but it seems like I did lose it. I guess it is Friday.
Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that Amazon is buying Whole Foods?
Well, if you believe that Amazon is the only place to buy anything from, that's going to put we talked about this not too long ago, about your grocery stores, your local grocery stores, close and shop. You know, first it was the retailers, and then it's going to be the grocery store. So if anyone is predicts something and talks about things that we're going to see in the future, that was one of them. Because we talked about that, what, 6, 7, 8 months ago. And so, yeah, this will put pressure on your local grocery stores. You'll see a lot of them close. You know, everybody wants to buy their food from Amazon, be my guest. I don't. You know, I'd rather purchase locally, you know, support the local farmers and so forth. But they're going to have a hard time, too. So no, it is not a good thing.
Well, it's an interesting thing. You know, there's a point in time where you have to wonder how big can a business get. We used to have conglomerates in this country where we had scores of, a dozen or more corporations at a time that were very dissimilar, would nevertheless combine, often dissimilar, not always. They would combine into conglomerates where there were a dozen or 20 or who knows how many. Right now, Amazon is trying to be all things to all people. And I'm wondering if it can succeed and if it's really powerful enough and sufficiently profitable enough to make that happen, or if this is evidence that Amazon is in some kind of trouble. Now, you wouldn't think they're in trouble if they're spending, I don't know, $11, $12 billion, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, 13. 13?
Mm-hmm. On Whole Foods. You wouldn't think they're in trouble, but still it is odd. How big can you get? I mean, how long before they start selling plastic PVC for septic for drain fields and septic systems, copper tubing.
You know, maybe they're already doing
it. I don't know. Maybe they already are. I mean, can we go to Amazon to get bricks and for build our next house and shingles and the rest of that sort of thing? Maybe we can. I don't know. There's something odd about it, and I wonder about putting all your eggs in one basket, because if something does happen to Amazon after they're selling virtually everything to everyone, what happens then? Where do we buy? You know,
well,
I'll have to set up a little stand out in the front yard, and I can sell lemonade or something. I don't know.
You know, you can see how this all evolved. I mean, I can remember Walmart when they were building the supermarts in every little town. It's like, what are they doing going into these little towns of, you know, 500, building these super Walmarts and so forth? They were called the government department store, grocery store, because you had Hillary Clinton sitting on the board. So there was that connection, and then we thought, well, you know, if they're going to distribute everything, they need something to where you had a distributor in every little town, every little city across the country. But now, and then you saw Walmart push all your mom and pop shops out of business. You know, the little hardware stores, you know all the little shops around town, they went out of business, mm-hmm. and Walmart benefited. Now you have Amazon. That's
pushing Walmart
buying
out
up
of business.
Everything, and they're hurting Target, Walmart. So now you have this one super store, and there's rumors. Well, Amazon is government also, you know, and because you know, I mean, he owns a newspaper. He, you know, he's just buying up everything. That deal was $13.7 billion in cash, and their shares, Kroger's sank. Almost 15%. Costco fell 7%. United Natural Foods dropped more than 15%. Your big box retailers weren't immune either. You know, as I mentioned, Target and Walmart. Target was down 10%. Walmart was down around 7% at one time. European grocers, Sainsbury and Tesco, they also sank on the deal announcement. So, yeah, it's, you know...
Do you think those declines in these other grocery store stocks, do you think those are rational, or are they just exaggerations? We'll get a day or two down, and then they'll bounce back up.
I think what it shows you is just how overvalued everything is, overpriced everything is, to have these big 15, 16% days, 17% super value plummeted 17%. Sure, they'll come back. That's a big drop. They'll come back a little bit. But I think the big drops like that really show just how far out of touch these prices are for a lot of these stores.
One of the things that interests me about Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods is my experience with Whole Foods is their prices are high.
They are expensive.
And I'm wondering whether Amazon is going to be able to cut those prices at all, or if they intend to just keep them as is.
Well, Whole Foods got in a little bit of trouble a little ways back, I think, for overpricing certain things. So they were in trouble. So don't know. Amazon, you don't go to shop to Amazon to look for the lowest price. They're there. At one time you did. But they're items anymore. They're not any less expensive than what you buy in the store. Mm-hmm. By walking into the store, so they'll probably still use the Whole Foods pricing. I don't think they're going to reduce their costs, you know, and make it, you know, like a Costco or something like that. People don't go to people who go to Whole Foods go there because they want healthier food. They don't care paying the extra price. You don't have people on food stamps going to Whole Foods. So it's the same thing. You know, they're not going to be buying online either. But
we'll watch and see what happens. But it is interesting. I think you make a good point that Amazon is no longer selling for bottom prices.
No.
Right? They're no longer buying business. They have established themselves now where they can make a decent profit. And does that mean they're beginning to do so? My understanding is I don't know if they've ever made any profit that was significant. And I know for years they operated at a loss. And apparently, if they've got an extra $11 billion, that's changed. or $13 billion or whatever it is.
Well, he does.
Well, I don't know. He didn't find it in the cushions of the.
He's moving to Mars. He's building missiles to Mars. So.
Yeah, right. He'll be selling Amazon. Get your Mars rocks out of Amazon before we're done here. Maybe moon rocks too. You can get moon rocks and Mars rocks. Maybe. Or if you're already living on Mars, maybe we can send you some Earth rocks. Hard to say, but it does indicate that Amazon is making a profit. They are not just, I guess, when you stop to think about it, and if they've got an extra $13 billion, they're doing okay. They're not operating at a loss anymore, and I hadn't heard that, but it appears to be true.
Well, there's always debt. You can borrow the money and pay cash, but...
Yeah.
One of the other interesting, there was two. I have something on new construction. Three straight months of declines in new home construction show U.S. home building may weigh on a second quarter growth. So maybe we're not going to be over 3%, as they keep telling us. Residential starts decreased 5.5%. This is the weakest in September. Starts in April were revised down to 1.16 million. While March figures were also weaker than last reported. Permits, which is a kind of a proxy for a future construction, that fell 5%. That's the lowest since April of 2016. Construction of single-family properties dropped 3.9% to the lowest since September, as I mentioned. And what other? Construction of single-family houses fell to 794,000 rate from 826,000 in April. Groundbreaking on multifamily homes, such as apartment buildings, that dropped 9.7% to an annual rate of 298,000. So again, housing is a very important sector of the economy. And doesn't seem like it's doing so good. And that's just with these few little rate increases that we've had. So those few little rate increases makes a big difference to people's purchasing habits, to their consumption. So it's a slow change, but the change is there. And I think this is what we're seeing in the in these numbers. There was another article that I saw. I was talking to Al prior to the program. Tillerson came out today. He was speaking to the House Foreign Affairs Committee yesterday, and he was asked a question about whether or not Trump's administration policy is one of trying to impose regime change on Iran. And he insisted that the specifics of administration policy on Iran are still under development. He did confirm that the goal remains regime change. Now, as I was telling out, that's kind of, to me, that's a little.
Where is our business alarming. To change other people's regimes?
And it's not going to be a peaceful transition of that government. And Iran can reach the U.S. So, I just can't.
You mean
even
they
believe.
Can reach us with intercontinental ballistic missiles?
I would think so. I would think so.
No, Iran hasn't actually bombed or attacked anybody in centuries.
No.
It's not a war. I mean, it's not an aggressive war-making nation. They've actually been pretty good neighbors, I guess. I mean, I don't follow it closely, but they haven't attacked anybody in centuries. It's pretty good evidence they're not going to do it on their own. And however much bluster comes out, it's...
I think we've had problems in the... You know, with... Reagan and
We have problems with Iran? You know, they have. Do we? How much of the problems real? How much are they made up? I don't. You know, there's a point in time where maybe they just don't like people meddling with their internal affairs. I'm not standing up for Iran. I'm not voting against them. I'm not voting for them. But somewhere along the line, it seems to me that we should learn that it costs a lot of money. Involve ourselves in these idiotic Middle Eastern wars, and where is the payoff on this thing? I mean, what is the justification? Are we going to give them democracy? They can't take democracy. They're Muslims. They can't take democracy. The whole idea of democracy is anathema to Muslims. They can't be democratic. We're not going to give them freedom. They're Muslims. They don't want freedom. They tell you they have signs to hell with freedom. right? That's what they say. They don't want freedom. You're going to do what the prophet says. You're going to do what Allah says. And you will submit or you will die. So there's nothing we have to offer them. And we go get... It's like the fox getting tangled up with the tar baby and Uncle Remus. And he doesn't just get caught up and gets stuck to the tar baby. He gets stuck to the tar baby every week. We get a new tar baby. And nobody seems to learn anything from it and say, you know, maybe we ought to leave these tar babies alone. Nope, the fox keeps, oh, look, another tar baby. Let's pick it up. Let's poke it. Let's do something. I wonder, what is our rationale for all of this? What are, you know, Brzezinski died recently, but he was a master of this idea of some sort of a global government and global conquest. I don't know what all he had in mind. But to what extent have people captured our government who are interested in some sort of globalism, not just New World Order, but actually trying to establish global dominance in a way that lasts for, who knows, another century or something? The whole thing, something is wrong, it's crazy, it's like we are pushing empire rather than rights and values. It's, we have become like Rome, right? We're involved in the affairs of nations around, all around the Mediterranean, figuratively speaking, but for our, as it was Rome, for us, we're the involved with everything in the world. Somewhere along the line, I would like to see a world where people just minded their own business. Understand? They got a problem in Iran. That's their problem. Let them deal with it. It's not our problem. What are we doing over there? Why can't we ever mind our own business? And I know we're not getting involved because it's going to help the American people. They sell us this crapola that, oh, they hate us for our freedoms. The only one who hates our freedoms are the people in Washington, D.C. The Muslims... I'm certainly not in favor of Muslims, I guarantee you, but on the other hand, who poses a greater threat to our rights and our freedoms and our prosperity? Muslims, Middle East, or the government of the United States? Who's taxing you? Who's taking this country to disaster through enormous debt? I mean, who are our real adversaries? And who regards us as their adversaries? And what are we going to do about that? I think one of the things we can do is take a moment for...
You know, it's been a long time, you know, and, well, we are ready for a break. We'll talk about when we come back.
Yes, that's what we're going to do.
Our solution. We are going to do. Problem. Hey, I think we should take a break.
Commercial. Yeah.
I think we should take
a break. All right, Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Or your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, we've been going through the 90% silver like crazy, anyway, I should say. So a lot of people are picking up those little bags of 90% quarters. And it is a great little buy at $340. So make sure you call us at 1-800-375-4188. Al?
Got an article here from oilprice.com. Now, this is a publication that deals with the oil industry. And that makes this article particularly interesting. The headline is Solar and Wind Revolution Happening Much Faster Than Expected. The clean energy revolution is unfolding even faster than previously thought, which will have massive ramifications not only for solar and wind industry, but also for the fading fortunes of old King Coal. Okay? Coal is going to be run out of business by solar and wind. That's the essence of this article, but the implications are that oil is perhaps not all that far behind coal. They don't talk about oil to speak of in this article. They do talk about natural gas. But they're saying, look, solar is doing very well. Bloomberg New Energy Finance published its New Energy Outlook with renewable energy forecasts through 2040. The Bloomberg New Energy Finance says that the costs of wind and solar are falling rapidly, and the transition to cleaner energy will become more significant than expected. This year's report suggests that the greening of the world's electricity system is unstoppable thanks to rapidly falling costs for solar and wind power and a growing role for batteries, including those in electric vehicles, in balancing supply and demand. Solar is already cost competitive with coal and natural gas in parts of Europe and the United States, and solar will become cheaper than fossil fuels even in China, India, Brazil, and Mexico by 2021. 2021, you know, you think, oh, that's far into the future. No, that's just a couple of years away. That's not far into the future. That's just a couple of years away. These tipping points are all happening earlier, and we just than they expected, and we just can't deny this technology is getting cheaper than we previously thought. Between now and 2040, the world will invest $10.2 trillion in new electricity generation, and renewables will capture 3/4 of that total. Wind and solar will capture 3/4 of the $10.2 trillion invested in new electricity generation. As a result, by 2040, wind and solar power will account for 48% of total installed electricity capacity around the world, up from 12% now. It's telling you, among other things, I mean, if you're inclined to invest in stocks, solar and wind are probably a pretty good idea if they're going to do more than triple their market share over the course of the next 20 years, all right? And that's what they're saying right now. They've also, the essence of this article is that everything is the costs for solar have fallen by 70%, 75% over the past decade, and will fall by another 65% over the next 25 years. I mean, that means almost everyone is going to have solar power to provide electricity for their home. If you can drop that and the opportunity to invest or the rationale for investing in the solar market is large, and they're talking about 25 years, 66%, or another 66% over the next 25 years, I don't believe that for a minute. I don't think we're talking about 25 years. I think we're talking about 10 years, 15 at the outside. This stuff is happening rapidly. Ultimately, the problems for coal look insurmountable. Solar is already cost competitive with coal in many markets, and the onslaught against coal will only accelerate. By 2040, coal consumption in Europe will fall by 87%, decline by 45% in the United States, and fall by 15% globally. I don't know where they're using coal. I presume that must leave, if it's only going to fall 15% globally, and it's going to fall 45% in the United States and 87% in Europe, assuming those predictions are anywhere close to being accurate, coal is going to continue to be used, presumably in China, maybe Africa, who knows, maybe South America. I don't know that coal is a big problem, is a big source of energy in South America. Maybe that's where it's going to happen. But the greening of the grid means that the global greenhouse gas emissions from electricity reach a peak in 2026, all right, about 9 years from now, and then start to decline. After that, all of the fuss about global warming and the rest of it, it looks like it's going to be taken care of, not by government regulation, but by new technology. Wind power, solar power. We have another where greenhouse gases will peak over the course of the next 8 or 10 years, and then they will begin to fall, if this report is correct. Global, go ahead, Melody.
No, well, you know, the way I view it is, number one, it all sounds possible, and I think solar is fantastic, but in order for to do the numbers that they talk about, you have to have people who have the money to convert their homes from their current electrical grid to go to solar and alternative power. I believe that government, your local cities and states and so forth, I don't think the cost is going to drop until they have a way to tap into that and provide it to the people, because they're going to want their cut. So somehow, and these power companies somehow are going to have to convert, you know, so they can provide the power to the homes and so forth. So government will stay involved. Government will get their cut somehow, some way. It's just not going to be independent where people go and convert their homes to. I mean, some will, yes, I get that. I'd love to. And there's products coming over. I saw Rob West, where he has product from, I can't remember which, was it Switzerland, I believe. It's called a power flower, or flower power. And as you sit in the bed, you don't put the tiles on the roof, but you set this solar panel up in your yard, and it's like a fan, and it looks like a flower. So that's how they get the flower power. And so I think Europe is probably more advanced than what we are here in the States.
Well, that's because the cost of petroleum products, gasoline, for example, is several times higher there, it has been for years, than it is here in the United States. They've had to deal with, when we were complaining about $2.50 gas, they were paying $5, $8, $10 a gallon. It's forced them to be more efficient. It's forced them to use smaller automobiles, more efficient engines, bicycles. But I'm saying the financial stress forced them to look to alternatives, and that would be solar and perhaps wind power.
So, you know, I think it's a good thing, but I don't see the time change as quickly as
I do.
What they predict.
I think it'll be faster than what they're predicting in this article. They're admitting that it's already moving faster.
I don't think there's going to be the money. Where is the world going to be able to invest $10.2 trillion?
I don't think that's as big. I don't see that that's an enormous.
Well, it is when we talk about the amount of debt that the world is in.
Well,
and add another $10 trillion.
When we talk about just private homes, I've seen one company that they will finance the solar panels to mount on your home. Okay, they'll finance them. You want them now? Yeah, they'll finance them. They'll take a look if your house can generate power, and then you will pay them something.
Yeah, well,
but even if you can't exactly afford it, they will pay for it. And it will, and you will repay them back over a period of time.
Debt.
Yeah.
How many people in this country can do that? I mean, every day we talk about the loss of purchasing power, and homeowners with property taxes continuing to rise. The majority of people who own homes across this country, the average homeowner can't afford.
If you can find a way to cut your energy costs significantly, a lot of people are going to jump on, right? And it would be just like a device where you can cut your mortgage. You can sign up with us, and we'll reduce your mortgage by $150 a month. Well, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to take that deal. Sign up with us, and we'll cut your energy costs by $75 a month. There'll be plenty of people who take the deal. But in any case, I'm just my main point with this article is they are saying. One of the major questions in all of this is the role natural gas plays in the evolving energy mix. Several oil majors are betting their futures on natural gas. They're not betting their future on crude oil. They're betting their future on natural gas, realizing that it could take large chunks of market share away from coal as governments try to clean up their electricity sectors. They view natural gas as probably the most dominant form of energy for decades to come. Natural gas, not solar, not wind. Natural gas. That's interesting to me. But this is oilprice.com, and they're not talking about what happens to crude oil. I think the implication of this article is that crude oil is in it's a permanently declining market. I don't think they're going to. I won't be surprised. I won't expect to see it soon, but I won't be surprised to see $30 a barrel crude oil in today's dollars. I think it could go down because the demand. I don't know that demand is ever going to reassert itself and regain where it was 10 years ago for crude oil. And until something is done to increase the demand, and it looks like solar and wind power is going to reduce that demand. Electricity, again, batteries make cars, electric cars possible. Battery technology. I saw that the Chinese, they are planning to produce an automobile that'll cost about $7,800. It's like a little go-kart, practically. It's not big. But it's a little go-kart, $7,800, runs on electricity. And it has changeable batteries. You go ahead and you've got one battery pack, and you plug that into the wall and it's recharging while you're out driving around in the little car with the second battery pack. And you bring it home and you pull the one battery pack out of the vehicle, plug it into the wall, take the other one that you've been charging, put that back in the vehicle, and you're good to go for another day. $7,800.
How many miles do you get?
I have no idea. I don't know, but it's got to be something. It's got to be enough. Suppose it was 100 miles. That's enough. Very few people are driving more than 100 hours or 100 miles a day. I mean, just to make little trips down to the grocery store, wherever you're going, you're just running errands.
People who work drive more than 100 miles.
Some people
do. Places in California where they drive an hour, an hour and a half to get to their
jobs.
Well,
it won't be for everybody. It won't be for everybody.
It's great for a little
retired. But my point
retired.
Is the technology is replacing the gas tank with batteries. You got two sets of batteries. One's charging during the daytime, and you're using the second one. Bring it home, swap out the battery packs. Got a fresh charge on. I mean, it's really a fundamental. It's a good idea. You don't need a generator in the automobile. All right, you're charging the batteries not with the automobile that's been charged at home. You don't have to have a super battery pack because it's not going to be charged in the car. It doesn't have to be charged rapidly. It can be charged over the course of a day while one battery pack is sitting at home. I'm just saying that This is the sort of thing that says, why do we need a gas tank? Why do we need gas tanks? If we don't need gas tanks, why do we need gasoline? If batteries can replace the gas tank, you know, technology is evolving. And the point, from my perspective, is it does not bode well for crude oil. It does not bode well for coal. Right? Both of these, and again, this article from oilprice.com didn't say anything about oil, said it's going to be great for natural gas, but crude oil is probably not going to be all that lucrative over the course of the next decade, 20 years. So that's my perspective, Melody.
Well, you know, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you know, we will see the process change, but I think it'll change a little bit slower, particularly since there is no more Paris Accord, or at least the U.S. is out of there. None of these countries are going to have the money to spend. Most of that money was going to come from the U.S., so I think it's going to go a little bit slower. And I guess it just depends on how hard they push the climate change and everything else that pushes. I don't think people will change. I mean, people won't change their power purchases, their electricity in their homes, by saving, you know, $50 a month.
They might.
I don't think they will.
They might. Well, I don't know how much they can save. I, you know, pull up a number, $50, $75. That may not be enough to move a lot of people, but it depends on what you have to invest in it. How much do I have to put up $5,000 to save $50 a month? I'm probably not going to do that. Right. If I've got the $5,000, I'm probably not going to spend it on something that'll save me $50 a month.
And I think that's why the time frame is a little bit slower than what they predict. But I mean, it is coming. I mean, it's just part of
it. And even that $50 a month isn't bad. I mean, we're talking.
And you know, people in there's certain areas of the country that, you know, solar is not, you know. Of course,
well, it's not feasible, but wind power is. Yeah, and the point is, you talked about something with flower power. Mm-hmm. New technologies are evolving rapidly. Nobody knows what's going to be. No one knows what's going to be available a year from now. And they can bring new technologies online in a very short period of time. And somebody can be working right now on something that turns out to be revolutionary. And you know, we worry and we were concerned with black swans. There may be some white swans out here also. It might be that some extraordinary events are headed our way. Who knows? And maybe not all trouble. So we'll watch and see, but I'm just saying that on balance, it looks to me like crude oil is not going to be as lucrative. I don't think we're going to see $100 barrel crude oil again. Not in today's dollars, maybe in hyperinflated dollars, yeah, but in terms of today's dollars, I think that's gone. I don't think you're going to see anything above $60 a barrel, and you could see $30 a barrel. Let's take a break, a couple more commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival.
Won't you take me back to school? I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. While we were taking a break, Melody and I were talking about whether or not this predicted technological advance will actually take place in the course of, Melody says it could happen in 20 years. I'm thinking it can happen in 10 or less.
I think 40.
Well, it may be, but part of the problem we've had with solar energy, I had a friend of mine named Terry Lofton. He's passed away. He used to come to our meetings here in Dallas. We used to have the Citizens for Legal Reform meetings in Dallas. Lofton was a regular. He attended our meetings. I helped him, and he was a great one for accumulating law books. I helped him one time over at Southern Poverty Law, or, not Southern Poverty, Southern Methodist University, and they were selling off thousands of law books out of their law library. All right, and Terry bought a pickup load. He filled the entire back of his pickup truck up with law books that he was getting for a buck a piece out of SMU. All right, I helped him load those up. Well, he was a good one for collecting this kind of information, and he went to some sort of an estate sale, and he bought three-ring binders that were, it turns out, they were Federal Reserve operations manuals. And they are still available to this day, although they'd be updated. These, what he saw, would be 20 years old from today. If it was still around, be 20 years old. But they explained how the Fed does, or how it operates, what it does, and what its policies are. And in the process of reading this manual, if you wanted to see this thing, it's available. These manuals are apparently still available at the Federal Reserve banks, but you have to make an appointment to see them. They won't let you look at them for more than a half hour at a time. And you can't take any notes, and you can't take any pictures, right? You can read them for a half hour, and then we throw you out, and maybe you can sign up again in another 6 months and come back for another half hour. Lofton had three of these, and he sold them to somebody, an airline pilot, for $100, which just absolutely aggravated me. And the pilot told me later he threw them out because he wasn't doing it. They weren't doing him any good. And I thought, my God, it's like throwing out maps to the buried treasure. You know, I mean, this was foolishness. But the point was that Lofton read these manuals, and he told me, and I have no doubt he was telling the truth, he told me that there are sections in the manuals that said at the time, this would go back, we saw these in the 90s, the manuals might have been 10, 15 years old. But when the manuals were written, it was Federal Reserve policy. They would only lend money to the established energy industries like coal and oil and nuclear. They're the only ones who got financial support with the approval of the Federal Reserve System. And any technology that you can't borrow money, you're not going to go very far. You can't borrow money from the big banks, you're not going to go very far. And ultimately, the Federal Reserve was saying, we're not lending money to alternative energy technologies. Well, to some degree, that's changed. And it may be that while solar power was struggling to advance without having easy access to enormous credit, it's maybe not struggling today. That credit is perhaps available today, and with that credit plus technological advances, we're going to see things happen very rapidly as to now and today as compared to what was happening 15, 20 years ago. Part of the point to this, I've talked about this before, but part of the point to this is that the Federal Reserve was actually controlling energy policy in this country. You would sit back and say, well, the Federal Reserve's job is to control the supply of money and interest rates and try to prevent unemployment and one thing or another. No, they're even involved in deciding which industries prosper and which ones stagnate. And they do it by controlling, by at least influencing, how much money is available to certain industries. Now, it's not to say that there was no money available whatsoever for solar energy, but it was not big bucks, right, that might have been possible if the Federal Reserve had sprinkled holy water on them and said, yeah, we'll lend money to solar and to wind. And if they had, where would we be today? It's hard to say if the money had gone into this. Now it's starting to go into batteries. That money is being invested in batteries, battery technology. Just incredibly important. You can replace the gas tank on your car with a highly efficient battery. This opens up, you know, changes the world. So I think this is going to happen rapidly, assuming that, you know, that the whole system holds together, which I don't assume, tell you the truth, but I think we're headed for trouble that will defeat a lot of this. But assuming that the economy held together as it is for another 10, 15 years, I think we can see extraordinary things happen in solar and wind power and whatever else they can come up with. So what else, Melody?
And you said, yeah, we need to move on. And I think you said that the key thing there, you know, if the collapse doesn't, and that's just it, you mm-hmm. know, once everything happens and we go through the, people are going to, if they're not protected, they're going to lose 70-80% of their money. They certainly aren't going to have any money to convert to solar and to wind. But usually through those difficult times, when we start coming out of those difficult times, that's when you have your innovation, because people are out there, you know, trying to make something, and they, and I think that's where a lot of your advances come through on the other side of the collapse. Once everybody's happy and everybody's spending and doesn't seem to be anything bad going on, you kind of, you have a way of carrying on what you're doing. You're not meant to change. You don't look, you know, if you're paying all your bills, and you don't look for ways to save and so forth, and technology, and those who, you know, the ones that are smarter than I am, they're you know, perhaps also not energized to or motivated to make the changes as rapidly. So that's what I think. I think your major changes comes after you have significant changes to economies and so forth. So, you know, that's where your big advancements come from. I think
that people who have savings, right? If we're going to see it, people, a lot of people have saved their wealth in the form of paper debt instruments like stocks, bonds, bank accounts, pension funds. My opinion, they're going to lose a lot of their assets, probably most of them. Mm-hmm. Certainly 50%, in my judgment, 80-90% that's stored in paper. The paper promises can't be kept. They're going to be repudiated. We don't know when, but it's going to happen. But other people who've stored their wealth in the form of gold or silver.
And how many do you think that is, Hal?
Well, it's a small percentage, but nevertheless, they're the people who are going to be able to find, if they are in a position, if they've got any gold or silver and they're interested in stabilizing the electricity, the electrical supply to their homes, they'll probably be able to buy mm-hmm. wind power. They'll probably be able to buy solar power technology at a fraction of the cost it costs right now. Mm-hmm. All right, a little bit of gold, a little bit of silver may pay for that in a very effective way. Here's an article from Washington Post. It says the Trump administration is at odds over how to keep the government from defaulting, and time is running short. The Trump administration is still divided on how to raise the debt ceiling as it rapidly approaches a point when government will no longer be able to pay all of its bills. Now, this is important. This is, you know, they make the articles, oh, we've got to do something to pay all of our bills. Look, their solution to paying all of their bills is they have to borrow more money. Let's suppose that I have an automobile payment that's due at the bank. I don't have the money for it, but I can borrow the money from my mother. Well, the bank doesn't care where I get the money. The payment has been made on my car. All right? But is it true that I am making the payment if I have to borrow money from my mother to do it? If the government has to borrow money to pay its bills, it's not paying its bills. If you're going deeper into debt, it's like using your MasterCard to pay off your Visa, to pay off your American Express. Yeah, technically your American Express is being paid off, but in the process, you are going in deeper into debt. And sooner or later, that debt's going to come back to bite you. You're not paying your bill. If you need to borrow to pay your bills, you're not paying your bills. You are borrowing money to make an illusion, create the illusion that you're paying, but it's not really happening. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin wants the debt ceiling to be increased with no strings attached. A clean vote that simply allows, that simply raises the government's borrowing limit without mandating spending cuts or other changes. Such a position is the one often favored by Democrats and would likely get their votes. All right, Democrats like the idea. Okay, well, we'll increase the amount of money we can borrow, and we're not going to have any spending cuts. Mulvaney is pushing for debt ceiling vote to be combined with fiscal reforms that could include changes in the budget process that set in motion future spending cuts. This approach often favored by congressional Republicans. Now, this is not going to happen. The Republicans have done this in the past. They did it one time with Obama. They said, all right, we'll suspend the debt ceiling, but you got to cut a deal with us that's going to cut spending in the future. Obama took the bait one time. Afterwards, he refused. He wouldn't do it again. The Republicans want to cut the debt. They want to cut the deficit. I've been arguing for the last month or so that an hypothesis that I can't prove, that because we have a debt-based monetary system, we must go continuously, persistently deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. Debt is not an option. Debt is mandatory. It's a required to hold the debt-based monetary system together. If the idea that we have a new debt ceiling vote is combined with fiscal report reforms that actually reduces future debt, I don't think it'll be accepted. And therefore, the idea pushed by Mulvaney is not going to take place. We're going to ultimately get a new debt ceiling with no strings attached that allows the government to go deeper and deeper into debt. That would be my prediction. And assuming my hypothesis is correct about the debt-based monetary system demanding more debt, then I think that's the way it's going to work out. The White House and Congress are running out of time to reach a consensus. Mulvaney and Mnuchin have said the government will only be able to pay its bills into sometime in September if Congress doesn't act, because there's a legal cap on government borrowing and Congress is planning to take a lengthy recess in the month of August. Now, this is interesting to me because they suspended the debt ceiling in 2015. It's been out for 18 months or more. All right. They said, we won't deal. We had the problem. We'll suspend it. We'll solve the problem by suspending the debt ceiling so we can go deeper into debt to allegedly pay our bills. And what I'm saying, look, if you got to borrow money to pay your bills, technically you are insolvent. All right? If you really pay your bills, you shouldn't be doing it with borrowed money. You need borrowed money, you can't pay. That's the implication here. Again, House of Representatives doesn't know how they want to address the debt ceiling. Senate doesn't know how they want to address the debt ceiling. We're not unusual there. All we know at this point is that we'd like to see it addressed sooner rather than later. What do they mean? All we know at this point, they don't even know what's going on. They have avoided this issue since 2015. We're pushing into 2 years that they haven't touched the debt ceiling when it should have been resolved, and they're going to take a recess. They're going to take a recess in what, August? It's evidence to me that the system is another sign to me. It's another leaf in the breeze that tells me, at least, that the whole system is sitting on the edge of some kind of collapse. Nobody wants to deal with the problem. Nobody even wants to address the problem. No one wants to say what the problem is. Problem is we can't pay our bills. That's the truth of the matter. And evidence of that is the $20 trillion national debt. How did we get that? We got it by not paying our bills. This is the problem. We're not maybe going to go in. We're not maybe going to see an issue in September where we can't pay our bills. We haven't been able to pay our bills for decades. Not completely. We paid some of them, but we've run up this $20 trillion national debt. Absolute evidence that we can't pay our bills. What did we do? We borrowed from the future. We said, let's borrow from the kids, from the grandkids. We'll borrow from them. We'll leave the debt to them, and we'll use it to pay off. We'll use it to technically pay our bills today. But the truth is, we don't have the revenue to pay our bills. And we're not paying our bills. We're borrowing to create the illusion that we're paying our bills. And to me, that is dangerous business, and it will inevitably come back to bite us. Raising the debt ceiling is a difficult political vote, but leaders from both parties said it was necessary to ensure that the government pays its bills on time. No, it's to ensure that the government creates the illusion that it's paying its bills on time. If you're borrowing money to pay the bill, you can't pay the bill. All right? Not really. If the debt ceiling isn't raised by Congress, Treasury officials have said it could lead to a stock market crash, a surge in interest rates, and could threaten the full faith and credit of the United States government. What is that full faith and credit all about? If you've got to borrow $20 trillion to maintain the illusion that you're still solvent and viable, that's evidence to me that the full faith and credit is not justified at this point in time. So in any case, my message today is, look, if you got to borrow to pay your bills, I'm saying that you don't really pay your bills. They're getting paid, but you're not the one who's paying them. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We're out of time. We'll be back on Monday. Hope you have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.